Hi, welcome to more Slice of Sci-Fi. I'm Summer Brooks, and with me now is Monty Yazzie, the director of the International Horror and Sci-Fi Film Festival. So who else better to talk about horror films than my good friend Monty? Hi, Monty.
Hey, Summer, how are you doing? I am so excited to be back on Slice of Sci-Fi. Always have a great time talking with you.
As someone who watches a lot of horror for the festival, having a new cluster of suspense horror films dropped on us from, the Welcome to the Blumhouse Project, who better to share insights and nitpickery with?
Well, and it's the best time of year. Even though I watch horror all year long, I always tell people that there's something about October that feels like it's extra special to sit down and watch scary movies.
And I think that's the most interesting thing about the Blumhouse Amazon movies. They aren't going for that theatrical top level horror scare. They are a little bit more subtle, but they're also satisfying in a way. At least most of the ones from last year were, and so far the ones for this year are turning out that way.
Yeah, it's awesome that, that they have these, we don't have movie stores anymore, right? We don't have Blockbusters or any of those places anymore. And that's where you discover those B movies. And it seems like now it's the streaming places that you're finding these lesser known films, and they're not lesser quality, but they're definitely not getting the big, cinema releases and everything. But man, there's some great stuff that you can find that are now only streaming and or only going to one of the streaming platforms. I just think that's really awesome that you're able to have so much. And it's getting to the point now where there's almost too much. How do you keep up with everything that's coming out? It is daunting to hear people say to me, "Oh, Monty, you got to watch this." And I'm like, I didn't even know that was out yet. It's crazy.
Yeah. The number of independent films, mid to low budget films that are coming out is almost overwhelming from just a sheer number count. And then when you throw into it some really well-made TV series on the cable networks and the streamers, it's a lot to try to keep up with.
I tell people all the time that it's sometimes very frustrating to where you have all these great television shows that come out, and there's one right now, Midnight Mass, the Mike Flanagan's new series on Netflix, that I just plowed through, and I was so addicted to that show. It was so engaging. And then you get other television shows where it may not fit whatever attitude or whatever emotion you're in during that night, and I forget about them. So there's many shows that I'll watch the first two episodes and then just lose track of them. And then someone will say, "Oh, I started watching Evil or something." And I'm like, "Oh, I watched the first two episodes of that. I should get back to that." Mm-hmm. Or I watched the new season of American Horror Story. And I'm like, "Oh, awesome. I saw the first episode too." It just becomes too much. And I love that, but it's also difficult to keep up with everything.
Yeah. With Evil season two going, I think it's on Paramount Plus.
Yeah.
Is that right? Yeah. I don't have access to that. So I'm I just have to wait until maybe there's a way to see it. And like you said, Midnight Mass, it's on my list. I still have a lot of stuff on Netflix ahead of it that I have to get through. For AMC, the new season of History of Horror, Eli Roth's History of Horror started. And what else was there? Creepshow. I think Creepshow started too.
Yeah. Yep.
And it's a lot to keep up with.
Yeah, it's so much. It's a great time to be alive if you're a horror fan, because there's just so much out there. And I think that we can, this is a whole nother conversation. And I think this is our ongoing theme, Summer, is when we talk, we have like four other podcast episodes that we could build off of our conversations. But, you know, I think the amount of content that's getting out there is great. It's great for the fans. It's great for people that are horror fans. But at the same time, you know, there's so much out there. It almost feels like, you know, you have to start being very selective with what you're going to watch because, you know, time is so precious and nothing makes me angrier than if someone says, Monty, you got to watch this movie. And I sit down and watch it. And I'm like, that was terrible. I just wasted 90 minutes of my life on that. I could have wasted 90 minutes on something else.
And for me, it's the sheer number of streaming options that are playing stuff that I want. You know, I want to get Apple TV Plus to watch Foundation. I would love to catch up on the stuff that's going straight to Paramount Plus. I do have HBO Max. I do have Hulu. I do have Netflix, of course. But that still doesn't give me access to all the other stuff I hear coming out, like AMC Plus. I would love to get AMC Plus. It's not available because my cable provider is not one of their lists, so I have no way to watch it. You can't watch AMC Plus on a browser. You have to have either, I think, Sling or Roku, or have your cable provider on one of their lists. And Verizon Fios is not on their list.
What a awful.
Yes. Awful.
Wow.
Yes. It's like, we are only going to offer AMC Plus to people who have these five particular cable companies. I'm like, really? Who decided that? How is that a thing that anybody needs to make a choice on?
Well, and I've arranged now to have all of my streaming platforms, paid for on the same day.
Mm-hmm.
Man, I should have never done that.
it's like your old school cable bill is back, right?
Yeah. Yeah, people said they're cutting the cable, and you cut the cable to add another cable.
Mm-hmm. That's ridiculous, but
I'm still one of those crazy people that has cable and all of those streaming services as well, too.
Because you want to be able to watch something that you may have missed on broadcast.
Exactly. Yeah. Don't come to me for finance advice on entertainment.
Yeah.
I'm not going to talk with.
Yeah, we're not gonna do that, but. So the first two films in this year's Blumhouse selection came out on October 1st, Bingo Hell and Black as Night. And those are the two we're going to talk about first. Bingo Hell. Here we go. Okay, the description for Bingo Hell got my attention because it was focusing on older residents in this community that is slowly disintegrating, I guess, just from being neglected and people moving away. But the description says, when a sinister figure threatens the residents of a low-income community, a feisty senior citizen tries to stop him. A 60-something neighborhood activist, Lupita, discovers that her beloved local bingo hall has been taken over by a mysterious businessman named Mr. Big. She rallies her elderly friends to fight back against the enigmatic entrepreneur, but when her longtime neighbors begin turning up dead under grisly circumstances, Lupita suddenly discovers that gentrification is the least of her problems. Something terrifying has made itself at home in the quiet barrio of Oak Springs, and with each new cry of bingo, another victim falls prey to its diabolical presence. As the cash prizes increase and the body count steadily rises, Lupita must face the frightening realization that this game is truly winner-take-all. And it's directed by Gigi Salguero, written by Shane McKenzie, Gigi Salguero, and Perry Blackshear. And this film was so cute. Just Lupita herself is just an adorable fireball. You know, the grandmother you expect to come running down the steps with a cast iron frying pan to whack on the people harassing her grandchildren. And her ferocity at protecting her community was grounded in history. You slowly learn over the movie that she was a community activist in her younger days, and some of her friends fought for civil rights and more in that community. So she feels very fiercely protective of what she saw as her legacy in saving that community so many years ago.
Yeah, and there's so much like about that backstory. I think that is just very, you know, well done in terms of like crafting that character, right? Like, why is she the way she is? And we get introduced to her in such a fun way, right? She knocks over that couple that has the the gentrified coffee place, and you know, as they're taking selfies and not really even drinking their coffee, here comes this feisty elderly woman who comes by and just politely throws a shoulder into somebody as they're walking across the street spilling their coffee. Just the most like, and but the most aggressive act, but from the sweetest looking woman that you have walking down the street. And that woman played by Adriana Barraza, who is you know, quite famous in the acting world for her acting studio that she has in Miami, Florida, not to mention all the work that she's done in Mexico, and you know, her time as a director of novellas in Mexico as well too, and not to mention her work here in America as an actress as well too. She's been in some award-winning films, such as Babel and Amores Perros, and a few other films as well too. So she definitely has her foot in the acting world in a very intense way, not just being on screen, but teaching people. And her performance is really a standout, I think, in Bingo Hell. She just really dominates like every scene that she's in.
Yeah, there's a, like I said, there's a quiet determination to hold on to what she thinks as, you know, her. This is her community. These are her friends. She needs to keep them safe. She needs to keep them all under wraps. She needs to keep them, you know, corralled, for lack of a better word.
Yeah, and a wonderful undertone about, like, protecting our seniors, right? Not letting them be forgotten and not letting them be disregarded, right? Not letting them, you know, disappear from existence. And this lead character is very much about making sure her people are okay. That, you know, they use that bingo hall as, like, you know, a place of, you know, of community. Where people can get together and they can share their woes. It's almost like if they were younger, it'd be the local dive bar. But for these elders, it's the bingo hall.
Yeah, and her connection to her grandson and her, I guess, the troubles she has with her daughter-in-law, her son is out of the picture, but her daughter-in-law is still, I guess, politely put, she's a hot mess.
Oh yeah, very much. Yep.
And the tension between them is so funny, and how the bingo hall, I don't want to spoil too much because I really want people to see this movie and enjoy it. But the short version is that the bingo hall is a community center. A new person takes it over and seduces people with large cash prizes. And those people tend to fall prey to their worst impulses after they've won the money. And that causes some fracturing in the community when the prizes each week increase and more people come because they want that money.
Yeah.
But the daughter-in-law, her betrayal is just, to typically say it, the entitled people "I don't work here lady" threads on Reddit will give you an idea. And just the sadness you see in her son, Lupita's grandson, all he wants is his mother's love, and he's fighting to be noticed by her, to be acknowledged by her, to just get a loving word from her. And you see like a desperation that could send him down a bad road. And you see Lupita fighting against that, in addition to losing her friends to this seductive new bingo hall owner. And it's, you see it. Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, it's a parallel to, you know, fighting to hold on to community, but to fighting to not succumb to aging as well. It's, you see her holding on tighter and tighter, and watching her not give up her fight because of the people she loves was touching.
Yeah, you mentioned the sinister Mr. Big in the story, who is played with the best evil grin. I think we'll see in October, but by the amazing character actor Richard Brake, who's been in everything from like numerous Rob Zombie films, like 31 and Halloween 2, as well as even in the newest one, Rob Zombie's newest adventures for his characters from I just forgot the Three from Hell. That's what it's called. Mm-hmm. His characters from House of a Thousand Corpses and Devil's Rejects. But not to mention, he was Joe Chill in the new Batman Begins. He's the guy that killed Bruce Wayne's parents in Christopher Nolan's newest. He's been in everything. And, you know, you think about all these movies that he's been in, he always plays such a memorable character. And I think, you know, it's nice to see him starting to get these, you know, more lead roles. He has such the way that he phrases you know, his sentences, and the way that it sounds like he could ask somebody what would you like, Pepsi or Coke, and it would sound sinister. Mm-hmm. Like, he just has such a grasp of that character, and I just love him. And I think he does it whenever him and Barraza are on screen together, they're magical. They have such a great intensity with each other. But I do really like what you're saying about, like, how, you know, there's this whole undertone of the film that is, you know, kind of touching on elder populations and understanding, like, you know, this woman's, why she's fighting so hard. And then also touching on that, like, socioeconomic component as well, too. And, you know, those neighborhoods that are being forgotten, and those neighborhoods that are kind of, you know, in better terms, you wouldn't call it, but you'd say dying off. Mm-hmm. Because of just the fact that they're just neglected now. And we see it all over town here in Arizona, you know, these old neighborhoods now that I remember growing up, that you're just like, oh, like that was a kind of a rough area of town, and now they have Whole Foods in the middle of it. So, mm-hmm. But yeah, you're exactly right. Like, I think that's that the undertones that they're bringing into this story, that, you know, at the end of the day is really kind of a comedy to a large extent. You know, there's a lot of comedic pieces in this film. But there's this really serious undertone that is, like, hidden underneath there about, you know, why our lead character Lupita is doing what she's doing.
Yeah, there's a slightly sinister aspect when you think about it. These older communities, these older neighborhoods, like you said, new money is coming in to redevelop them, and the people who have lived there for 30, 40 years can't, you know, afford to live there anymore. They're being pushed out of their homes in a similar way as, you know, people were pushed out to make room for highways and stuff in the 50s and 60s. And, you know, this time it's just making, you know, freshening up the communities for the younger generations, or the more money generations, at the expense of the people who established those communities in the first place. And there are actually a lot of suspense and horror stories set around gentrification. I'm kind of looking forward to seeing how creative filmmakers get with that topic in the future. But Richard Brake, is, I have to admit, the first time he broke out that sinister smile, you know who it reminded me of?
Who did it remind you of?
The old preacher from Poltergeist 2.
Oh, wonderful. That's a great pull. Yeah, completely. He definitely has that look. Those crazy eyes too, man.
It's like the eyes that look like, you know, the smile definitely does not match the intent. Because somebody smiles that big, you think they're warm and welcoming, and that grin says, "I'm gonna eat your liver while you're still watching." I'm like, oh man.
Yeah, he actually, it's funny you say liver, right? Because he was in Hannibal Rising as well
That's
too.
right. That's right. That's funny. That's funny.
I think too, I think we're missing just some love for elder horror films. I love me a film that is centered around old people. You know, I think initially the first movie I think of is Bubba Ho-Tep,
Oh,
by
yeah.
Coscarelli, you know, where you got Bruce Campbell and what could be, as memorable of a role as he had in the Evil Dead movies, playing a elderly man who believes or is Elvis Presley, and a wonderful Ossie Davis who plays his counterpart John F. Kennedy, and it's just a beautiful film about again like what you're saying about that spirit, that undying spirit that I'm gonna keep fighting until the very end. And there's something so beautiful about that. But watching this movie made me start thinking about all of these like movies that kind of center around old people, elderly people, and the idea of horror. So I have a few recommendation for people that I think, if you're looking to maybe make this a double feature with something else, here are a few I think that would be really great. These are might be some lesser known films here, but. There's a film from 1971 called The Brotherhood of Satan. And The Brotherhood of Satan is about a family that ends up being trapped in like a small little desert town. But there's a cult of senior citizens who are all trying to recruit that family's and the town's children to worship Satan. Come on. Come on. If that doesn't pull you in to watch The Brotherhood of Satan from 1971, I don't know what movie will, but it's definitely a really kind of creepy film. You get a bunch of old people like looking, sinisterly into the camera, but I always like that one. I think there's a movie that came out a few in 1981. It's based off of a Peter Straub novel called Ghost Story, that follows a like group of older gentlemen now who are all played by like some very famous people. Fred Astaire is one of them. Douglas Fairbanks Jr. is one of them. John Houseman's one of them. And it's all pretty much in their final roles. But they play this society of elderly men who tell one another ghost stories. But then these elderly men all become caught up in a ghost story of their own. And it all concerns like their kind of past sins that come back to haunt them. But Ghost Story is a really great one as well too. I really like that one. And then I think the one that really struck me, in terms of like really situating with kind of the comedic tone that Bingo Hell is going for, is a movie from 1974 called Homebodies. And Homebodies is a movie that is about a community of older people who are fighting for their home. And they're fighting for their home because it's being taken over by a group of developers. So these older people, become more and more wrapped up in this idea that their homes are being taken away from them, and it escalates into a story about them murdering construction workers. So that's the one PG movie that you're going to get in here. It's directed by Larry Use, but it's Homebodies. It's from 1974. But I think those three movies I thought of, or four movies actually, with Bubba Ho-Tep are the ones that I think of when I was watching Bingo Hell. Because it really is a story about, the elderly spirit. It's about, this idea that, elderly people are still necessary and they're still part of the community. And, I think about it in terms of like my being a Native American, and how much honor a elder gets in a Native community, like an honor that you do and jump when they say get up and jump. Like there's no like, oh, I'll do that later, grandma, or I'll do that later, grandpa. You get up and you do it, and it doesn't matter who it is. That it can be your grandparents, or it could be your friend's grandparents. It could be some strangers that just happen to be over the age of 65. It doesn't matter. If it's an old person in a Native community, they tell you to do something, you get up and do it no matter what, or else you'll get scolded. I remember one time I did that in front of my mom. I told my grandpa, wait, 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 grandpa, I'm going to do something first. And my mom came up to me and was like, you don't talk to your grandma like that. It was real stern with me. And I do that with
Yes.
my kids too. I tell them that all the time. Like my son can sometimes get caught up in his YouTube videos and there's grandma trying to tell him to do something and he's over there all caught up in his YouTubes, not responding to them, and I have to step in and put on dad voice.
Yep,
And
there's.
yes, I know I said YouTubes. I
Yep.
know I said YouTubes. Okay, that I just want to let everybody know that I'm old and I call it YouTubes.
YouTubes, yes. No, there were more than a few Thanksgivings when I was a kid where grandma wielded the spoon like a
Oh yeah.
samurai sword,
Yep.
or in one instance a shoe went flying from the back bedroom out to the living room and actually landed on its target. I'm like, whoa, grandma. My cousin never did that again, let's just say.
Oh yeah. You know.
But
Definitely
yeah, and
definitely listen when grandma or grandpa talks.
yep.
You gotta jump.
And I will second the recommendation for Bubba Hotep. I had even there was like a the first I think an early printing of the novella was like a limited edition hardcover from Nightshade, written
Oh,
by
nice.
Joe Lansdale for people who want to go show it. But I don't know if it's still on Shudder, but at one point about a year ago, Bubba Hotep was on Shudder. So go find it if you can. And I'm curious about Homebody, so now I'm gonna try and find that one for myself.
Homebodies is one of those lesser known films, and I just remember it from I think it was late night. Had to be late night horror show like Elvira or Joe Bob or something like that. I
Really?
recommended it. Yeah, so I
Nice.
remember pursuing it when I was in finding it at the VHS store and not really getting it because like I was a young person who like didn't really understand like why these old people were so scary, but yeah, definitely that one.
Well, the next movie in this first set released by Welcome to the Blumhouse is Black as Night, and this is I guess gentrification taken a different way. They're trying to prevent the tearing down of a blockhouse that was severely damaged in Hurricane Katrina. Let's see, where's the description here? Here we go. A resourceful teenage girl leaves childhood behind when she battles a group of deadly vampires in Black as Night. 15 years after Hurricane Katrina ravaged New Orleans, a new threat leaves its mark on the Big Easy in the form of puncture wounds on the throats of the city's vulnerable displaced population. When her drug-addicted mom becomes the latest victim of the undead, 15-year-old Shauna vows to even the score. Along with three trusted friends, Shauna hatches a bold plan to infiltrate the vampire's mansion in the historic French Quarter, destroy their leader, and turn his fangs disciples back to their human form. But killing monsters is no easy task, and soon Shauna and her crew find themselves caught in a centuries-old conflict between warring vampire factions, each fighting to claim New Orleans as their permanent home. And that really doesn't come very close to describing everything that's going on in this movie.
Yeah, it does take a lot of different turns in this one, but it's centered in New Orleans, and it looks like they shot a lot of it in New Orleans. Which is great. I love New Orleans horror, and at the end of this, I'll give my recommendations for some other pairings for New Orleans horror films. But it does like fall into like it's kind of serious at times, and then sometimes a little lighthearted. It looks like feels like it's trying to go for like some Lost Boys vibes from the 80s. But I appreciate, you know, the structuring of this story and like how they're trying to kind of put a new spin on, you know, the history of New Orleans and maybe its history of the people that are in that area as well too, by, you know, really emphasizing on like the Black American population in that area and how, you know, their experience is different than everybody else's that might be in that area. So I appreciate that piece of you know storytelling and how it's trying to allow for this other story to be told. And it's very well acted. I really like the lead actress. And
Asha, yeah,
you said
Asha Cooper, she really nailed that role.
Yeah, she does a great job. And then the Mason Beauchamp, who plays Chris, he has a great physical presence on screen, and he just has this like charisma. He's kind of playing the hunky guy that our lead character is kind of fawning over in this movie. But he's really great as well too. And then you get Keith David. Come on, man, Keith David, anything is going to be a good time. And the last movie I saw Keith David in was in the Tales from the Hood, the second version, part two. I saw him in that one. He plays a character in that one as well, so that's really good. But yeah, I do appreciate what they're trying to do with it. It feels kind of like Anne Rice, Interview with the Vampire, another film set in New Orleans. But it has that kind of same texturing of like these vampires are old and there's societies for them and there's, you know, this whole history that has been going on for centuries, and now you get this new character that is kind of pushed into the mythology of vampires in this old city.
Yeah, the once they get into the mansion of who they've been told is the vampire master Lebrecht, it totally goes in that Interview with the Vampire old French influence vibe, I guess. The seeing for me, seeing how the teenagers come together once they realize what's going on, and because you've got this street preacher who is preaching against having this dilapidated building that was completely damaged, totally ruined by Hurricane Katrina. He's talking about keeping the building, not tearing it down and building something new for people to live in. It's mostly condemned. People who are in there are displaced people squatting, for lack of a better word. It's not safe. Doors do and don't work. Most of the people in there are homeless, are addicts, have other issues with substance abuse, like our main character, Shauna's mom. And you sit there and you wonder, is it because he doesn't want the building to go away, because any new building that goes up, people in the community wouldn't be able to live there? Or is there something else going on? And of course, later we find out there's something else going on. But the kids, they are so vibrant. And her best friend Pedro is flamboyantly gay, completely her conscience about, when it comes to being afraid to be herself, instead of holding back because she's trying to be the good girl, she's trying to satisfy what everybody around her thinks she should do. And Pedro's like, nah, girl. And that friendship is so genuine. And that makes Yeah, no spoilers. The twist at the end, really, hard hitting.
Yeah, she that their relationship is fantastic. Their chemistry on screen is really well as well, really well done as well too.
Yeah, so I don't want to spoil too much because I think it's a fun movie. It gets a little slow and confused in a couple of places, but overall, I really enjoyed it. And like I said, I thought I knew where they were going with the story when they started diving deeper into the, social aspects and the predatory, like the preying on the homeless population, but it didn't quite get there for me anyway.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun with Bingo Hell. I thought that, what they were doing with that movie was, understandably silly at times, but also like they added this whole other component of like the underlying concerns, for elderly people and especially for somebody who, grew up as someone who fought, injustices and then proceeds to have to fight injustices again as she gets older. I wanted more of that in Black as Night. I felt like, that they do a great job of kind of introing this like kind of sinister, really kind of dark film that it almost every scene takes place in really desaturated nightclubs and houses and stuff. Like there are some scenes that are actually, at least from my perspective, are kind of difficult to see what's going on because the lighting is so dark in some of those places. But the vampires have these glowing red eyes, which I thought was kind of cool. But I just wanted a little bit more of like some of that context of like, we've seen so many vampire films, and maybe that's where the issue is like we have such a history of vampire movies now and such a knowledge of like what vampire films can be that when you go and try to in embed some new ideas in it, maybe place it in a different locale and maybe emphasize it from like younger people's perspectives. You've seen all of those things. We have Lost Boys that you get to see a story told from a young person's perspective. You have films like Interview with the Vampire where you see it from a historical perspective. And there's so much that you can talk about with the Black experience, with those ideas that this movie does touch on some of those pieces, but I just really wanted it to go a little bit further with it. Still though, I thought the performances were really well done. I think there's some really great, chemistry that the cast has with one another. I just really wanted it to go a little bit further into that context. And again, maybe that's unfair of me to make that assessment when you're talking about like vampire films because there's just so it is so much vampire out there. Maybe if they didn't make it vampires, maybe it was demons or something like that. I don't know. I don't know where the shift would be, but I couldn't help get out of my head all of these other vampire movies that I had seen while I was watching it.
Well, the movie is directed by Marit Lee Go and written by Sherman Payne. And later on, everyone will hear my interviews with Fabrizio Guido, who played Pedro, and Mason Beauchamp, who played Chris, the hunky vampire hunter. And they had a lot of fun making this, and both of them would be completely on board for sequels. And this, I think this movie does deserve a sequel just because of the history between the two different factions of vampires that we learn about. And I want to see that. I want to see Chris all decked up as a vampire hunter in mercenary gear. I want to see that movie.
There definitely is a, it leaves it pretty open-ended to explore more of those areas at the end of this film. And you're exactly right. Maybe a sequel will help to fill in some of those gaps that I'm having with the story and maybe expand on it a little bit more. And I think too, like Summer, I think maybe too, let's say Black as Night was a television series, right? 6-episode television series about this faction of vampires told, from a specific point of view for black people living in New Orleans, I think then you get to tell the story that really really dives into those concerns. But still, again, like I don't think it's by any means a terrible film. But definitely, I think it's one that people are going to want to check out because it's just fun and it's short. Like, I love films that, kind of fit into that nice little 80 to 90 minute time slot. Again, earlier tonight, I said I'm getting old. So 90 minutes is like a kind of is the amount of time that that would give me a click of a button, but there's so much content out there. Like, if it's 10 o'clock at night and I see, man, I really want to watch this movie by such and such a director, but it's 2 hours and 20 minutes long, I'm probably going to pick the 80 minute movie before I pick that longer one. But Summer, do you mind if I like tell my New Orleans recommendations?
Yes, please. Give us the stories you recommend people check out.
So I love Malcolm McDowell and Natasha Kinski. And they made a movie in 1982 called Cat People.
Oh my goodness, yes.
You remember Cat People?
Oh yeah.
I
I
love
even after I
Cat People.
saw that, I even went and found the original 1942 Cat People because the new that new one intrigued me
Oh
so much.
yeah. And Cat People has like, I mean, it has a stellar cast, like Natasha Kinski, Malcolm McDowell, John Hurt, Ruby Dee, Ed Begley Jr. You got so many people in that movie. And it's directed by Paul Schrader. And Paul Schrader is a director of a movie called First Reformed. He was the writer for Taxi Driver. He was the writer for Raging Bull. I mean, this guy has credits like you wouldn't believe in film. Not only as a director, but as a writer. He's just done so much. But I just love this movie. I think there's some wonderful transformation scenes that you get in this film. And it's like sexy too. And I like the fact that they can make, these movies that have this like undeniable sex appeal and, but are still kind of creepy and still a little scary. And I really like that one. And it takes place in New Orleans as well too. Another one that I like is a more recent film. Actually, no, let's go back to another old one because there's a film from 1976 I really like called JD's Revenge. JD's Revenge is a film about a gangster named JD Walker, who is shot and killed in the 1940s. But his spirit remains like restless for many, many, many years. And in the 70s, he go his spirit is re-evoked, and he takes possession of a law student and proceeds to hunt down all of the people who were involved in his death. And it takes place in New Orleans as well too. JD's Revenge might be a little harder to find, but it stars Glenn Turman and Lou Gossett, and it's just a wonderful like little slice of revenge and 1970s blaxploitation filming. I also really like a movie from the 2005s called Skeleton Key, which takes place in New Orleans as well too. It stars Kate Hudson. I don't like to give too much away about this movie, but it kind of deals with the voodoo slash hoodoo of the South, and has this wonderful performance. Kate Hudson's great in it. And it's just really well done film. I'm not going to give too much away about that one because it's still kind of new, and I think people should just watch that one. And finally, this is probably my highest recommendation, and I'm sure you could probably guess as well too, Summer, but this is 1987, and this is a wonderful movie called Angel Heart.
Oh, wow.
Remember Angel Heart?
Oh, yeah.
Mickey Rourke, Robert De Niro, Lisa Bonet. A character whose name is Lewis Cipher. Lewis Cipher. That's all I'm gonna say.
Yes, people can figure that one out.
Yep, and it is a piece of New Orleans that I absolutely love, and it's the one film I think of all the films I mentioned that really like takes in New Orleans, and I know I'm gonna get flack for saying New Orleans the way I'm saying it, but I can't say it the right way. It's too hard, and it sounds like I'm faking it when I say it the right way. But I love Angel Heart, and I just think like that movie is so like, you know, it's slightly underappreciated, but it shouldn't be because it has such a great cast, and it just feels New Orleansy, like the back roads, you know, when they go down to, you know, the French Quarter, and all those scenes, they just play out really nice, and I just always love Angel Heart. So those are my films from New Orleans that I think would pair nicely with Black as Night.
Cool. We will have a list of that, and there's nothing wrong with not being able to pronounce New Orleans the preferred way of Nolens. It's a southern thing. I learned this about
Nolens.
Louisville, Kentucky is not pronounced Louisville. It's Louisville. It's
Louisville.
Louisville. It's Louisville. And they know you're not from down there if you pronounce it any other way.
You know, I tell people all the time, man, New Orleans is like probably top three favorite cities in the US for me. I love the culture. I love, you know, the history, all of that. I just think that city is so alive. And whenever I'm down there, I try to, you know, participate in something new, something different. And I just love it. So anyways, this podcast is sponsored by New Orleans.
Well, a lot of friends I know actually loved NCIS New Orleans. They were very upset that it was canceled, but the music vibe that was in that show was incredible. And I kind of have to believe they did that to sort of match the punk electronica vibe that Abby had whenever you went into her lab. You know, instead you had this jazz vibe going into Pride's Bar. So it is what it is.
Starring Scott Bakula, everyone, from Quantum Leap.
Oh yeah.
Okay.
And
He's
Star
Dr.
Trek
Sam Beckett.
Enterprise.
Oh, don't forget Enterprise. Jonathan Archer, right? That was his name. He's Captain
Yep.
Jonathan Archer.
Captain Archer.
And Dr. Sam Beckett from Quantum Leap. But here's the thing, too. Like, and this is, I'm going to go little deeper cuts with this because I know him from a movie that I snuck into as a kid. Do you know what movie I'm talking about?
I think I do.
It's a film that was directed by Clive Barker, and it's from the Clive Barker story, The Last Illusion, and it's a movie called Lord of Illusions.
Yeah.
And Scott Bakula plays a private detective who is like trying to understand the world of magic and illusion. And I just love the way Clive Barker directs. He can make like the most like tiniest things seem really sinister. And Clive Barker didn't direct a whole lot of movies. So Lord of Illusions, I believe, is the last movie he directed before he stopped. And I'll have to double check that, but I'm pretty sure it was Lord of Illusions was his last one.
Cool. We will have links to all of your recommendations where people can try to see some of these films. And Monty, thank you for sharing your insights.
Thank you, Summer. Can't wait to talk more about the Blumhouse films that are coming out next week.
Yep, and those two movies are The Manor and Madres. So stay tuned. We will be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi right after this.
Of sci-fi. A lonely alien pet bravely waits for the family that may never return. An astronaut with seconds to live discovers just how good victory can taste. A mecha pilot and an aristocrat strike up an unlikely friendship. Take a ride with Escape Pod, the Hugo-nominated weekly science fiction podcast, at escapepod.org. Every week will launch you into an alternate reality, so buckle up, it's story time.
So yeah, this episode's a little bit long, so we're going to do the short and sweet outro. Bingo hell. and Blackest Night are currently available on Amazon Prime, part of 2021's Welcome to the Blumhouse Project with Amazon Studios. Go check it out. If you have any questions or comments, let me know. Summer@sliceofsci-fi.com. You can listen to Slice of Sci-Fi on your favorite podcast providers. You can find us at sliceofsci-fi.com. Come on by. You can help support Slice of Sci-Fi through Patreon, through Ko-fi, and through PayPal. And thank you, everyone who is currently supporting. You make it possible for me to do shows like this, talk to people like the creators of these films, and I'm having fun doing this. I'm hoping you're having fun listening to me do this. So thank you all for your support, and that will do it for this episode. Thank you all again for listening, and we will be back with more Slice of Sci-Fi next week. Take care.